Ferguson fans, I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Lineker. Wheels, how's it rolling?
All right. I feel like there's no hype around the Super Bowl. Do you feel that also?
Yeah. Well, personally, of course, I am not going to acknowledge that the Super Bowl is even happening. But yeah, it's a crazy amount of completely no hype because nobody's interested in these boring ass Eagles. And, you know, the Patriots are also boring because they've been there 1,000 times. There's no story. There's no narrative. There's nothing like unique or interesting about this Super Bowl. Just boring and irrelevant.
Well, let me hit you with this. I was just thinking this before. Would you rather, from the day after the Super Bowl going forward, would you rather be, just in terms of potential championships won in the next 15 years, would you rather be an Eagles fan or a Patriots fan?
A Patriots, for sure.
I mean, you have Brady, what, 1 or 2 more years left. Belichick will probably retire after that. What is there then?
The Brady-Belichick combo is a greater than 50% chance of going to the Super Bowl every year.
I mean, but this could be it, especially if they win. Like, you have a team without their starting quarterback in the Super Bowl who's only getting, you know, the quarterback will be back and only getting better.
Well, hold on. Well, you've been on record for like 2 years as saying that Brady's retiring. He's not going anywhere anytime soon.
I mean,
there's no chance he's retiring after this year.
So slight slippage this year. I mean, we don't have to rehash this a million times, but
yeah,
I think I'd rather be an Eagles fan.
I mean, I thought we weren't going to talk football. I was excited to talk about other stuff.
All right, we can talk about whatever you want, but I do think this is like a hot take. I think I'd rather be an Eagles fan.
Let's just keep look. 31 teams. And I'm the guy, by the way, in August who picked the Eagles as his like sleeper team to win the division. But nobody the Eagles are not a team who anybody thought coming into this year was like a legit contender. Maybe it was just a fluke year. We see this every year. Some random team in the NFC.
All right, but is there a young quarterback you'd rather have than Wentz?
Yes, 2 years ago was the Carolina Panthers when Cam Newton was the MVP, and then the year, like every single year, we see this.
Last year
was Matt Ryan who was the MVP. Every year, some quarterback comes out of the NFC, plays like an MVP, and then regresses the next year. There's no reason to think that Carson Wentz his floor is now going to be a top five quarterback. It's possible, but it's not likely. You know, right. And I'm sure Eagles fans are going to go nuts when they hear this, but Falcons fans would have gone nuts if I said this last year, which I did. And Panthers fans would have gone nuts if I said it the year before, which I didn't, because, you know, I believed more in Cam. You know, he was a number 1 overall pick, and you know, he showed a lot more promise, I thought, right off the bat. And he did more with less, I thought, in Carolina than either Matt Ryan or Carson Wentz did. So it's entirely possible that the Eagles are here to stay. But is it more likely that they're here to stay than it is that the Patriots for the next couple of years will be in the Super Bowl? I would say no.
All right. So how about this?
Yeah.
$5 bet starting Monday, more Super Bowls next 15 years. I've got Philly. You have New England. And who's tracking this? Is Paul the Saints fan still tracking our bets, or is he sleeping on the job?
So the next 15 years. So this will go from 2018 through 2032.
Yeah.
More Super Bowl appearances.
You want to do appearances or wins?
Oh, wins. Either way. Super Bowl wins. Super Bowl appearances, I guess, is easier. All right, Super Bowl wins. A $5 bet. I'm putting it on my calendar for January of 2033.
Oh. Oh, man. I hope we're both still here. This is like morbid.
Yeah, I was excited that we weren't going to talk football. I was going to say to you, you know, my application to the Podcasters Guild finally went through, so they sent me all the screeners. So I've seen like a dozen movies this week.
All right, but we literally do like a really long podcast talking about movies.
So I'm not going to talk about it. Yeah.
Nope.
I saw
embargo.
Dunkirk.
And the Podcast Guilder embargoes you.
I'm not even allowed to say what movies I've seen.
No, you can see what you saw.
All right. Well, last night I saw back-to-back. I saw Darkest Hour and Dunkirk.
Yeah, Darkest Hour is like you have to be a nerd to even watch it.
It's funny because to me, I knew
because everyone says it's bad, and you have to be like into Churchill to even care about it.
I knew going in I would love Darkest Hour and hate Dunkirk, and that's obviously what happened. And you know, but we're not allowed to talk about them. I thought so.
I mean, we're talking about the best movies of the year, so Darkest Hour won't even come up in the podcast.
It's
we do it.
it's the second best movie of 2017 for me so far.
Okay. I gave you a list of other things to see. Av already has his whole list ready, so you could ask him for that. And,
yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, we'll do that one in a couple.
I've seen most of the movies this year already. Actually, I've seen a bunch of them. Been mostly underwhelmed, but all right.
I haven't spoken to you. What else have you been up to?
I don't know. I haven't been up to anything. I've been like in a dark, depressed. Just the more I think about this missed opportunity, the sadder and sadder I get. You know, the Super Bowl's in Minnesota. It's so weird because the whole city is like in celebratory mode, but not. It's like it's like they planned for a wedding and now they got a funeral, but they still have to go through the motions. They still have the schmorg and the ceremony and everything, and you know the hall is booked and the band is booked, so they have it. It's a very weird environment in Minnesota.
Do you ever think about how the majority of listeners don't know what the word schmorg means?
Yeah.
Hors d'oeuvres? I don't know. But yeah, that's but, not, what are you talking
there's
about?
There's a word that the caterer uses. Stations. I don't know. Stationed hors d'oeuvres. Whatever. Yeah. The point is it's like the reception part before the wedding when you have like, you know, sushi at one table and, you know, carving station at the other table. All right. Let's talk a little bit about football. Another thing that will be happening is the Peter King and the rest of his idiot friends get into a room to decide who's making the Hall of Fame this year.
Okay. Give us that quick because you're the only person who cares.
Yeah. Well, do you have opinions? I posted already. I'm looking in the Facebook group. I posted on January 2nd when they came out with the finalists. I ranked the finalists in order for me. So I want to hear your opinion.
Well, I'll tell you what will happen. You tell me what you think should happen.
No. I want to know what you think should happen. Okay?
Okay. All right. Go through them.
All right. So
don't include the veterans, people. I don't care.
Okay. So I'll say from bottom to top. To me, the last one was Tony Boselli. Just did not play long enough.
Yeah, 7 years.
Yeah. Do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
No, I don't think seven. Yeah. You should make it for being in.
Unless you're something like insane, or even like at least Terrell Davis at the postseason. Like Boselli was he was a good tackle for 7 years. Next.
Yeah, I mean, if you could convince me that he was the number one tackle in the league for like six of those 7 years, then we could talk. I mean, Barry Sanders, 7 years. Barry Sanders to me.
Joe Thomas on the Cleveland Browns has a stronger argument than Tony Boselli. By the way, if he never played again, I think he would be a Hall of Famer.
But Thomas, I think, has 11 years.
Yeah. But also, yeah, but he was, yeah. All right. Next is Joe Jacoby, who's just a classic example. Every guy who played for Washington in the 80s has this ridiculous overrated.
Good player on a great team, yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't even, he made a couple Pro Bowlers. I mean, that's silly. Next, I have Everson Walls, the cornerback. He's fine, but he's, you know, short of Hall of Fame caliber. I'm not sure why he's a finalist, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You have a difference of opinion there?
No, because I didn't see him play. I don't know, you know.
All right, the seniors committee guys, Robert Brazil, Jerry Kramer, to me, they're sort of similar. They're good players, not Hall of Famers, but whatever. They're gonna make it. Next, I have Ty Law. To me, Ty Law is like a borderline case. And
yeah, nobody ever thought, when Ty Law was in the league, nobody ever thought he was a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think, but then after the fact, you go back and you're like, oh yeah, he was, you know, a key part of that defense for a decade.
No, I don't think he's close, to be honest.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, because I've had a couple Patriots fans mad at me that I had him out. I had him as like a borderline case. I had him sort of similar to, let's say, Sam Madison, who played in that same division for a long time. And then I'll give the edge to Ty Law because he had, you know, some good plays in the postseason. And you know, and
by the way, Ty Law and Sam Madison had the same Madden grade every single year. Basically, they were either like 87s or 88s. Like,
well, I'm saying they're similar players.
Considered a Hall of Famer.
All right,
I judge all my my mid to late 90s guys on what their grade in Madden was. Tony Boselli was a 99, so he should be in. Tony Brackens on the Jaguars was 100. Jerry Rice was 100, but he was too late for him to be 100. Law was an 87, basically the same grade as Sean Springs, if you remember from the Seahawks, and Charles Woodson from the Raiders.
Yeah.
I could give you, if you name a player who was in the NFL in 1998, I could tell you their Madden grade from Madden 99.
Okay, Jake Reed.
Jake Reed, I think, was an 85.
Yeah, I don't know how to fact check this. So.
Well, I mean, it's fact checkable.
I'm sure it's on the internet. Yeah. Okay, let's go back to these Hall of Famers. All right, Steve Atwater, you know, he made big hits, so he's a little bit, you know, he gets a little bit extra hype because of that. But to me, he's you know, just short of Hall of Fame also.
Yeah, 92, I think, in Madden 99. Steve Atwater. Right.
Is he a Hall of Famer to you?
Yeah, I think when he was playing, he would have been considered a Hall of Fame level safety. I think I could take him or leave him. Like He's in the, you know, he's the better part of the Hall of Very Good or the worst part of the actual Hall of, you know, Hall of Fame. He's
but
really
would
borderline.
He, but would he be one of your five candidates? Because he can only vote for five of these 50.
No. Yeah. But if I could vote for 10, he would be in there.
Okay. So for me, he's number 12. So if I could vote for 12, he'd be there. Number 11, John Lynch, a little bit better than Atwater, a little bit longer career.
I think Lynch over Atwater. And I think when one gets in, maybe it'll help the other one.
Yeah. I agree with you about that. Number 10. Isaac Bruce, you know, there's such a glut at receiver, obviously. He's the third receiver on my ballot. So, you know, I could see him getting in, but there's two receivers obviously much more deserving than him right now.
Yeah. I mean, when we saw him play, we thought, like, oh, there's a Hall of Fame receiver.
Did we really?
1,780 yards in his first full season.
Yeah.
He has eight. He only has 8,000-yard seasons, but they're all, like, really, really good.
Yeah. He was also in the receiver-est of eras.
Yep. I mean, he's got longevity.
I mean, to me, I have him as the number 20 receiver of all time.
Yeah, so that to me, it's not like, you know, a disaster if he makes it, but that's probably very borderline.
Yeah, okay. By the way, so you were talking about his seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I have a chart, and I have this running backs and receivers. Number of 1,000-yard seasons, 1,200-yard seasons, 1,400-yard seasons, 1,600-yard seasons to see how many guys had a long career, but a long career at sort of at various points, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you said, Isaac Bruce had 8 1,000-yard seasons, which is the same number as Torrey Holt, Reggie Wayne, Rod Smith, Steve Smith, Derek Mason, a lot of guys. Four times, he upped that to 1,200. So that four times, that's the same as, you know, let's say Chris Carter, for example, or James Lofton, both in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. or Henry Ellard, not in the Hall of Fame. And then two times, he got 1,400-yard seasons, right?
Yep.
Which is something that Hall of Famer Tim Brown never did, something that Reggie Wayne never did, and obviously he had a better receiver, something Chris Carter never did, actually. Steve Largent, Hall of Famer, never did that. And then he had the one season that you talked about, his one, the best season, when he had 1,600 yards. So that sort of that 8-4-2-1 matches up very favorably, I think, to like Calvin Johnson and actually Rod Smith, surprisingly, on the Broncos. Rod Smith is an 8-3-1-1. Rod Smith is very similar, actually, except that he didn't have sort of some of those years on the back end, but... And nobody talks about Rod Smith as a Hall of Famer, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Okay, next on the ballot to me, I have number 9, Kevin Mawai. Your thoughts on Kevin Mawai?
Mawai.
Yeah.
This is like classic Chester. You don't even know how to pronounce his name. But
no, it's I openly troll you by Todd Bowles. I say the name's wrong of everybody on the Jets just to annoy you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, Mawai was always like one of the two or three best centers in the league. He has longevity. To me, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And this is the problem, because there's not a room to put in, you know, a center like this every... He's not going to get in. He'll be lucky if he gets to the top 10.
Well, but you think he'll never get in?
I'm not going to say that. It's going to be really hard for him.
Well, so here's a good comparison. Jay Hilgenberg, who was the center for the Bears in the 80s, and he's a guy who had more, you know, a higher profile team than Mawai ever did on, you know, on the Jets in Tennessee. And sort of a similar career, 7 Pro Bowls versus 8 for Mawai, 2 All-Pros versus 3 for Mawai. But Hilgenberg never has gotten even close to the Hall of Fame, right? Jeff Saturday, by the way, do you think he'll get close to the Hall of Fame? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. Saturday, for whatever reason. You know, Mawai, it's a little bit of a PR thing. I think if he had pumped himself up more, if he was, you know, sometimes you help yourself. Like, you go to NFL Network, you're still in the media afterwards. It'll help. Saturday, for whatever reason, was infinitely more famous than Mawai, who played in New York, but really was a little
Guy. It's hard to, look, Mick Tinglehoff on the Vikings in the 60s and 70s, one of the greatest centers of all time, you know, was a first-team All-Pro 5 times, you know, and he didn't make the Hall of Fame until a couple of years ago, which is sort of really hard to understand. So you never really know. As I said, I have Mawai number 7 on my centers list, and everybody in the top 9 is in. So I think he'll make it eventually. But, yeah, he's not going to make it this year. Number 8 on my ballot is Edgerrin James. To me, there's no question he should be in the Hall of Fame, and it's silly that he's not. Your thoughts?
No, I have no problem with Edgerrin James not being in the Hall of Fame. He was really good player, but he was not like a special running back. You know, he was a very good running back in a great situation.
Okay. I mean, he had 4 seasons with 1,500 yards rushing. You know who's done that in NFL history? 4 guys. Eric Dickerson, okay. Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, Edgerrin James.
Yeah, none of them had Peyton Manning.
Okay, but the other 4 are Eric Dickerson, Barry Sanders, and Walter Payton. Nobody else has done that. 4 1,500-yard seasons.
No, listen, I don't have a problem if he makes it, but I don't think
Andy was a great receiver out of the background.
Yeah, he was a good receiver.
Backfield, excuse me. Yeah, I'm a little bit offended on Ed James's behalf. Ed James, he had 5,900-yard games. That's more than Adrian Peterson, O.J. Simpson, you know, Jim Brown, the same number, more than LT, more than Terrell Davis, more than Marshall Faulk, more than just about anybody. Let me see, his 5,900-yard games, how many is that? Where does that fit all time? If you had to guess, what would you guess?
I have no idea.
It is the 7th all time, 1 behind Curtis Martin, the most 100-yard games of all time. So Ed James, to me, there's no doubt he should be in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, I wouldn't vote for him this year just because, you know, you can only pick 5 guys. He's 8th on my ballot. So that's Edge James. Let's talk about Brian Dawkins for a second. What's your take on Brian Dawkins?
Wait, so now we have 3 safeties. We got Atwater, we got Lynch and Dawkins.
Well, I have those 2 at 11 and 12. I have Dawkins at 7.
But I'm saying we have 3 out of the 15. That's a lot of safeties to be choosing from.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, one of them has to get in for the other ones to get in. I think they're all pretty similar, right? I'd say Dawkins, I'd say in the inverse order we've set them, I'd say Dawkins probably ahead of Lynch, ahead of Atwater, but they're... You know, I'm sure you could make a case for any of them.
Well, that's not the inverse order. I'm going from 15 to 1 on my ballot. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Brian Dawkins...
No, the inverse order of what we've discussed.
Yeah.
Meaning that I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he's clearly a class ahead. Like, you know, Lynch and Darren Sharper, who's, you know, not getting in for rape-related reasons.
Can Lynch get into the Hall of Fame just by fleecing the Patriots? Like, if they re-sign Jimmy Garoppolo, he's in the Hall of Fame, basically.
But I'm saying, so those guys were, like, good, like, Pro Bowl-type players. But Dawkins was in the category with, like, Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu as, like, you know, defensive player of the year caliber guys, I think. I mean, Dawkins was, like, the best player on that Philadelphia defense for years and years.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, to me...
Like a super relevant, very good team.
Yeah, to me, he's got to be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not one of my top five. Is he one of your top five or no for this year?
No. Okay. No, I think these guys are all even. They're all probably about the 8 to 10 mark. All
right. To me, number six... and he will get in this year is my prediction, but to me, he's just outside the top five, so I wouldn't vote for him this year, but I would obviously, you know, there's 12 guys on my ballot who I think should be in the Hall of Fame, is Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, Urlacher's getting in.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that he did have a weird story come out about him a couple weeks ago with some like $120 million lawsuit by some disgruntled person, I forget whom, maybe a wife, maybe an ex-wife. But yeah, he's getting in. I think with the Hall of Fame, you have a bunch of Peter Kings where it's just whoever's the most famous gets in.
Well, but let's talk about somebody for whose performance in his career is almost identical to Brian Urlacher, and yet isn't talked about at all, and that's Zach Thomas.
Yeah. Zach Thomas doesn't make the Final 15, right?
Ever. Why?
Because he played Miami. Urlacher was just much more famous. But yeah, Zach Thomas was a great player. The NFL should be putting in 10 guys a year.
Yeah, let me give you some numbers. Brian Urlacher, 182 games played. Zach Thomas, 184. So almost identical, okay? Mm-hmm. Brian Urlacher had 1,354 tackles. Zach Thomas had 1,727, so more tackles. Urlacher had 33 interceptions and forced fumbles. Zach Thomas, 33 interceptions and forced fumbles. So exactly the same. Urlacher scored 5 touchdowns in his career. Thomas, 4. Urlacher, 8 Pro Bowls and 4 All-Pros. Thomas, 7 Pro Bowls and 5 All-Pros. And approximate value, which is like war for football, Urlacher, 150. Zach Thomas, 152. So they're like the identical guy.
Yeah.
Urlacher won the Defensive Player of the Year once, which Thomas did not. But so it's a little bit surprising to me that Zach Thomas has been totally ignored. But but I think you're right. I think Urlacher will get in. Let's get to my five. These are the five who should get in, according to me, if you can only put in five. Number five is Steve Hutchinson.
Yeah, probably the best or second best guard for, you know, about a decade straight. I think no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was him or Larry Allen, basically, in our lifetimes. Right. Or Alan Fanica,
now, I don't
I
think he's 100% locked this year, but he's certainly 100% locked like in the next couple years.
Yeah, he'll get there eventually. I agree with you. This year he won't. And part of the reason is because number four on my ballot is Alan Fanica. And they're not putting in two guards.
Yeah. You know, I saw Fanica more at the end of his career when he was on the Jets, when he was, you know, the fifth best offensive lineman on like a historically great offensive line.
Okay, but in Pittsburgh, he was, you know, the best. He was a 6-time first team All-Pro.
Yeah.
Right? Which is
now, I don't know how much of that is reputation also. Like how much was guard play really being analyzed?
But by that standard, those are the same people who are voting for that are voting for the Hall of Fame.
No, I listen, right. We're talking about should and then will he. I think he's he's in good shape.
Yeah.
He's probably ahead of Hutchinson on the list, but I'm not 1,000% sure.
Yeah, but do you agree with me that both of them will not get in this year? There's no chance they both get in.
Yeah. Oh, both? There's no chance they both get in. Yeah, of course not.
Yeah, well, that's what's on my ballot. And then number three and two are also the same position, which is Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. T.O. obviously did not get in last year for some absurd reason.
I don't think he's getting in this year because he didn't even get to the 10 last year, T.O.
Yeah, because he doesn't like prostrate himself and kiss their asses the way that they like their asses to be kissed.
Mm-hmm.
And so... it's kind of insane to me. You can't have a Hall of Fame without T.O. and Randy Moss. It's just stupid.
Well, Randy Moss has no problem getting in.
You think he gets in easily this year?
Yes, and then I think maybe T.O. Finally gets in next year. That's my guess.
All right. And then the number one, obviously, is Ray Lewis. To me, he's the greatest middle linebacker of all time.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, you know, and it's actually surprising, given how many huge names there are at, you know, at every defensive position, middle linebacker, which is sort of the quarterback of the defense, is a relatively weak position. Like, the greatest middle linebackers of all time, before Ray Lewis, was Mike Singletary.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's like, let me put it this way. Other than Ray Lewis and Mike Singletary, the Defensive Player of the Year award has only gone to a middle linebacker 3 times ever.
Well, they don't compile stats, right? They don't get sacks or interceptions, so you have to really stand out from the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's sort of a surprise. Like, you know, there's so many defensive ends who we've heard about. Now, I guess, again, they get the sacks. But there's even so many defensive tackles, and they don't usually get as many sacks. And then outside linebackers, obviously, you know, you have LT and Junior Seau and Derek Brooks and, you know, all these guys that, you know, Derek Thomas, the late great. So to me, Ray Lewis is obviously going to get in. And so tell me, who do you think is going to get in? It's Ray Lewis, you said, Brian Urlacher. So two middle linebackers.
Okay, Lewis, Urlacher, Moss.
Moss, okay.
Faneca.
Oh, you do think Faneca. Okay, good. Because he didn't make it last year.
Did Faneca make it from 15 to 10 last year? I think he did, right?
Yeah, but I think that's where he got cut off.
And I'm going to say John Lynch. I just think it's like a lobbying game. And like right now they all want to kiss up to him because he's like a source for these guys.
Yeah,
it's an insane conflict of interest.
Yeah, it's just dumb. There's no way he was better than Brian Dawkins. I'm sorry. You know, let alone Terrell Owens.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree.
Yeah. All right. That wouldn't be terrible. At least, you know, at least they're not going to put in like Joe Jacoby, although they're going to put him in eventually because they're so desperate. You know, they keep putting him in this final 15 for some stupid
I mean, anyone who consistently gets in the final 15 basically
makes it eventually. Yeah. But they have this weird artificial threshold where you have to have five guys. So, you know, anyway. All right. That's our Hall of Fame conversation. All right. Akiva, enough of this football. You and I have no interest in this Super Bowl. So can we skip forward a week and start talking about the Olympics?
All right. So as if you listen to this, you probably know I'm writing this super, you know, excessively long Deadspin preview, which I've done before. And I mentioned on the podcast that if anybody has if someone knows a curling expert or a bobsled expert or a cross-country skiing expert, hit me up because I've only covered the Summer Olympics for NBC and for Deadspin before. I've never covered the Winter Olympics, so I'm sort of operating at, with lesser knowledge here than I would for the Summer Olympics. And one of our listeners said, I have a friend, I don't know, friend, acquaintance, I have no idea, who's actually going to be in the Olympics. And not only that, but he's like yourself, Akiva, and Alex, he's an Orthodox Jew. He is, I don't know if he's our age. I think he's a little younger. We'll find that out in a second. But I think, you know, he would come on your podcast.
It's cute that you think you're of an Olympic age still, Akiva.
What do you think, like, prime skeleton age is?
Your body's in peak physical form, Akiva.
Listen, I could get, we could have this conversation in a second. All right, so let's bring him on. But I'm so excited and honored that we have on the podcast our first ever Olympian, A.J. Edelman, who's going to be doing skeleton for Israel next when the Olympics start next week. I think the competition itself is in 2 weeks. So, A.J., thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, A.J., so, you know, you grew up an Orthodox Jew, which means, of course, as everybody knows, the main thing that drives Orthodox Jewish kids is the desire to one day compete in the Winter Olympics in skeleton. So it's like it's a cliche, you know, Orthodox Jew becomes a skeleton Olympian. So, you know, how did you become just another one of that classic cliche? Tell us how you got there.
I don't know if I was trying to impress my parents or not, but so I was I played hockey from youth. From about age 3 until age, I would say 23.
And where are you growing up? Is this in Boston?
It is in Boston. I grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts. Okay. Born in Boston. Went to a school called Maimonides School. It should be known to a number of your listeners. And I played hockey through my youth. I did the full yeshiva thing in Israel for a year before heading to MIT and played hockey through MIT. One night in October of 2013, I was kind of thinking, how could I best continue my athletic career? But if I really wanted to continue the athletic career, it would have to make some massive impact. That would be the only way that I would be willing to kind of sacrifice the next, what I thought was 8-12 years of my life to sports. So as I was kind of thinking that, I thought, you know, probably the biggest impact that I could make would be to increase Jewish participation in sports and to increase the belief amongst young Jews and Israelis that sports was an outlet for them and that it wasn't just a joke that Jews couldn't do sports. So while I was thinking that, I was watching NBC News that night and the bobsled team trials, the U.S. team trials of bobsled came on television. I thought, you know, that sounds crazy enough and it looks crazy enough that it would really capture the imagination of people. And I thought, you know, I can do that. So I hopped on Google. I Googled Israel bobsled team. I found a website of the now defunct Israel bobsled team, but it turned out that they had somebody competing in a sport called skeleton. So I emailed everybody on that site, got a message back from a number of them, and they said, you know, we don't really have bobsled anymore, and bobsled is for people, but if you really want to give it a solo shot, you could do skeleton. So they sent me up to Lake Placid in March of 2014. I tried it out there and I kind of fell in love with it.
I read in an interview you gave, AJ, that you at some, I don't, tell me when, at what point this happened, that you wrote down the amount of days until the 2018 Olympics, or it was the 2022 Olympics and you're early, as a goal. It was 2,000 days or something.
It was 2,884. And I'll never forget the moment because it was my birthday. It was Erev Shabbos, Friday afternoon, close to Shabbos coming in. It was March 14th of 2014. My 23rd birthday was that day. And I saw Steve Holcomb, who is the U.S. bobsledder. He came into the cafeteria at the U.S. Olympic Training Center where I was trying out skeleton. And he was holding a box of pizza and he was holding a medal. And I thought, that guy just accomplished an amazing goal. And I want to do that as well. And so I took out a piece of paper and I wrote down, first I Googled how many days there were until the 2022 Olympic Games. I sit down and I wrote 2,884 on a piece of paper. And that was the goal until about 6 months later. I became aware of basically the scouting report that had been given on my behalf to the people who were higher up in the Israeli Federation, which was, he will never make the Olympic Games. It's impossible for him to excel in the sport. He can't run and he has no future in it. And at the same time, I was at a competition in Park City, Utah. And I heard someone say, that guy is so bad at this sport. He can't run for anything, that he can't accomplish anything at all. And in 4 years, he'll be gone. So at that point, I actually still had this 2,884 written down because I was counting down every single day. And I crossed it out and I wrote 1,442. And that at that point, it became my goal to make the Olympics in 4 years.
That's amazing.
So you're an overachiever, basically. I like how you say, like, you know, I was only going to do it if I could make a big impact. I mean, you went to MIT, so you could have been, you know, like, you know, getting like a Nobel Prize, which would have had an impact.
In my view, I mean, going to a university is not ever an accomplishment. A lot of people would, when I got into MIT, a lot of people said congratulations. I never really understood why. A lot of people said congratulations when I graduated from MIT. I never understood why. Like, going to any university is not a particular achievement at all. Leaving a lasting legacy in life is a major achievement. So, I mean, if there are many people who go to schools that have big names and never accomplish anything.
Yeah, I know. I for sure know people like that.
So for me, it was always about, you know, if I wanted to do something that was on at face value a bit selfish, doing sports for another 8 to 10 years, then it had to be something which really left a lasting legacy. It left something which would inspire other Jews in the wake of that journey to accomplish something themselves.
All right, so let's look at the 2018 male skeleton lineup that you're competing against. You're walking in the room, probably one of the underdogs. Who's the guy that you're looking at as like the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick? Like, who's the guy who you want to take down? Who's like the gold medal favorite?
Who's the guy I want to take down? The guy in skeleton, you can't really take down competitors, unfortunately, because unlike other sports, you don't compete directly against them. It's you, yourself, and the ice. And each of you go after the other. So there's no blocking somebody else's shot or picking them off like in football. So I can't really take him down. I could do as best as I can. But the person who would be the gold standard for anybody in the whole world to take down would be Sung Bin Yoon of Korea. Sung Bin Yoon has established himself as the number one skeleton athlete in the world. He's battling with the Latvian Martin Dukers, who has for the last about 10 years dominated the sport.
Right. Dukers, because I'm like knee deep in my Olympics research right now, this is a crazy stat, Chester. So Martin Dukers, like AJ said, has been the number one guy for, I think, about 8 years in a row. In 2010, he earned silver, right, AJ, because he went up against a Canadian athlete in Canada. And it's a big deal to be on your home track because you have way more
training
experience
runs.
With training runs on the actual hill. And if I'm not mistaken, there's about 15 hills on Earth, right? So it's not like you could just, you know, train anywhere. Like, they're very specific to each one is a different. There's a lot of differences, right, on each hill too.
Correct.
So he loses to a Canadian athlete in Canada, goes to Sochi in 2014, and loses to a Russian athlete in Russia. Although I think. Not that it's great solace to him, but I do think he'll probably get that gold medal at some point this year. because, like many other Russian athletes, he was popped for doping. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, AJ. So he loses there. And now, amazingly, 4 years later, he goes to a third different country and is only, not only, obviously, he's a lot of competition, but his primary competition is another home athlete from a country that didn't even have probably, you know.
Hold on, Akiva, we're talking to his primary competition right now. Like, show him the respect.
No. Absolutely, absolutely.
AJ, I didn't want to. Do you have a rivalry with the Americans? Because obviously you're also American.
Not at all, because I never tried out for the American team. There was never a thought of competing for the American team, so I don't have actually too much contact uh-huh. with the American team. The American team for me has always been just a nice amount of people to say hi to, but it's never really
right. But they know you're American. They know who you are. That sort of thing.
Everybody in the whole sport knows who everybody else is. It's such a tight knit community. It's
small, right?
Right, because Olympians compete in the same competitions as brand new athletes. It's not where you have separated tiers for the most part, where an Olympian will only be relegated to the World Cup. An Olympian can compete on any track they want at whatever point in time. The only limitation there is that the top 15 in the world. Can't compete on the lowest level circuit, but the lowest level circuit is fair game for everybody. So I've been competing against Olympians in every race that I've ever raced on over the last 4 years.
How many people in the world are trying to basically do what you did? How many people are actively skeleton? How would you say it? Skeletoners? Skeletors?
Sliders. A lot of people actually ask if we're called Skeletors. I don't know why, but mm-hmm. Sliders. There are hundreds of active sliders in the world. In terms of how many appear on a race circuit each year, it's limited by country because each country can only send a certain amount of athletes to each individual race circuit. But there are hundreds in the world who try to make it in skeleton in all sliding sports. But it's actually much the same in almost every sport where you have national teams that are made up of the people who win their respective selection races. And then from then on, you have all the other athletes who failed to make those circuits and they're just training back at their home facilities.
How do you train for skeleton?
Well, it's a great question. A lot of people ask what I do during the summer, and that's generally how this gets asked. During the winter, we'll start with the winter. Taking training runs is the number one way to get better as a driver. And so it's not like we just lay there after the sprinting start. We start with a sprinting start, then we dive onto the sled. We don't just lie there for the course of the run. If we did, we'd actually get seriously hurt. People could die if you don't do anything. So the sled is split into four quadrants on the inside, and we apply pressure to our heads, shoulders, knees, and toes. The head, like driving in a car, if you turn your head to the left, you sometimes drift a bit to the left. And you apply pressure to your shoulders and knees to torque the sled under the G-forces in the corners. So that will be immensely important to steer the sled correctly. And training runs is the best way to do it for the most part during the season. During the off season, in the winter months, we train a lot in sprinting start. The sprinting start is a critical start for us. Every tenth of a second at the deficit, every tenth of a second deficit at the start, you're 3/10 of a deficit at the bottom.
I want to ask you, so at what point did you realize that you had a chance to get to the Olympics? And then when did you actually clinch and qualify for these Olympics?
For me, noticing that I had a chance was, it never occurred to me whether I wanted to have a chance or not. It was just doing everything that could be done to make the Olympic Games. And that really, for me, was it. So for the last 4 years, it's just been a nonstop mission.
What's your goal for the Olympics? Is your goal to win? I mean, if I were to ask an expert, which I did. It's funny how you said your sport is small. When I'm running my preview, I try and speak to like an expert for each sport. So speaking to the luge, bobsled, skeleton expert, who is a fellow named Ken Childs, who lives in, I think, North Carolina. And I said, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to speak to this guy, AJ. He's a friend of a friend. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's like a friend of mine. So it really is a small sport that the expert knows the athlete.
Yeah,
pretty
Ken's,
well.
Ken's great.
Yeah. So, what's your realistic goal for South Carolina?
The realistic goal is it's hard to peg a numerical placement on it just because I've never competed against all of these athletes at the same time. It's very similar to a world championships type setup. So realistic goal is definitely beating out a few other nations, even nations that are in front of me, just because they don't have the home track. They don't have the knowledge of the track and I'm a very good driver. But on the whole, the goal itself is to represent Israel in a way which really gives a lot of pride to the country. The country has given me an incredible kavod, an incredible honor to represent it. So competing in a way which doesn't embarrass the country is actually just a prime objective. In terms of a high placement, that's yet to be determined. My sprinting start is making it to the games itself is an incredible achievement for Israel, just because I've never had a coach. I believe I'm the only one who's going to be there who has never had a coach or any national level funding. And so that's really the goal. It's to create a lasting positive impression of an Israeli athlete competing at the games, not as a passenger, but as a real good driver.
And past the Olympics, what do you like? Is there a chance you would continue for another 4-year cycle?
Very hard to see, or very hard to know. It's just that the sport financially is incredibly draining. It costs about $40,000 a year, and as I mentioned, I've never had any national level funding, and I've never had a coach. So with a coach, I think just the level of skill would skyrocket, but it's just not. It's not something that I think could potentially be fair to my family or my future family to continue to, you know, spend the $40,000 a year on it. And we'll see. One thing is for sure is I'm not done with Israeli sports. Israeli sports is an animal passion of mine. Jewish sports is a passion of mine. So however I can remain connected to it, whether that's in coaching or if that's in furthering, directing funds to necessary athletes, I'd be appreciative of it. But it's hard to tell exactly what's going on after these Olympic Games.
Are you going to walk in the opening ceremony?
Absolutely. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Has that set in that, like, you're going to be there with, like, all, you know, like, every, like, sort of, you know, famous, like, super elite athlete in the world, and you're just going to be in the stadium? Like, it seems like, you know, that's almost, like, just as cool as actually competing.
I think, for me, the opening ceremonies have always been just a source of motivation. There were a lot of times when I was in Europe in these places that it's cold and wet and awful, and you're on your own, you haven't seen your family in 7 months. I make it almost a point not to go home during the entire skeleton season, just because the goal always comes first and family could wait. At least that was my philosophy. And
yeah, it's our family can wait is literally the podcast tagline.
So for me, the opening ceremonies was always the source of inspiration, walking behind the flag. It used to just bring tears to my eyes when I watched Israelis walking behind their flag in the opening ceremonies that I watched the recordings of for Rio and London. So walking into that stadium probably would be the highlight of, it could be one of the highlights of my life, but for what it represents as an Israeli athlete, not for being with the other athletes yet.
I mean, that does sound amazing. I will. One funny thing, like, I'm, you know, an Olympics nut, and I'm a crazy person who's, you know, 100 hours deep into, like, Olympics research for one silly article, and I've never watched opening ceremony, and you'll, I guess, appreciate this, because it's on Friday night, and...
When they haven't invented DVRs yet.
We don't watch TV Friday night, and it's not something like I'm a sports guy. Like, the ceremony is like the least important part to me, but obviously if I was an athlete, it would be the coolest. Like, I'm not belittling the ceremony. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's an ice cold take, Akiva. The opening ceremony and the closing ceremony are almost the only things, like, they have the higher ratings than any other part of the Olympics.
Yeah, they're pretty big shows.
Yeah, no, but for me, and I didn't even watch the closing ceremonies when my name was in it in 2012. Like, to see myself in the credits, I didn't watch it. Just to give people who are not Orthodox and maybe don't hear Chester and I talk about it constantly. So you lucked out. The event, I believe, is Thursday morning and Friday morning. So you have no conflict with Shabbat anyway, right?
Yep.
Which has to be nice. Like, do you have Shabbos plans for South Korea, in South Korea?
I don't. I know that we're probably getting kosher. Well, I'm kosher, so I would assume that we're getting kosher food. In terms of the Shabbos plans, it would be my honor to make Kiddush for the rest of the team. Generally, when I trained at the Wingate Institute in Israel, it was me making Kiddush for the other athletes who were staying at the Wingate on Friday night. Generally, they were there visiting for competitions that they would attend on Shabbos. I don't train on Shabbos, so basically making Kiddush would be a big honor for me for the Olympic team. But we'll see if they invite me to do so. I'm certainly ready and happy.
So that actually leads to my next question I was going to ask you, you know, because you're obviously training and a lot of the Israeli Winter Olympics athletes train and compete in, you know, in parts of all over the world, not just in Israel. So how well do you know some of the other people you're going to be marching with, you know, in the 2018 Israel delegation?
I only know the chef de mission, who's the liaison between our NOC and the Olympics. I don't know the other athletes because I've just never met them. It's possible actually that I met Alexei, the speed skater, when I was at the Wingate Institute in 2016, but he was there only for a day to get some medical tests. So I don't know any of the other athletes just because they're in such completely separate sports and train in such completely different locations.
How many times are you going to get to train down the hill before you actually compete?
10, which is a major disadvantage of being an athlete who's not from Korea.
Right, but I mean, everyone has that other than you know, the literal gold medal favorite, right? And maybe another Korean.
Exactly, but there's one more element to it, which is that everybody else is going to have a support staff and coaching, and I don't have any coaches at the games with me.
So even at the Olympics, so I'm AJ, I'm in the Olympic Village. I'm going to the skeleton track. You are literally going by yourself.
The head of my federation will be there, and he'll be able to video some of the corners, but he doesn't know anything really about skeleton lines or how to drive the skeleton sled. He was a former bobsledder. So, no, in terms of support from a coach's standpoint, I have none.
That's correct. And you will be the only person there who does not have any sort of, like, legitimate skeleton support?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing.
All right. So, listen, if you're in South Korea, go Thursday and Friday morning to the skeleton track to cheer on AJ.
You should get where's Ken? Ken knows his stuff. Let's get Ken to help.
Ken wouldn't know driving lines, but I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have skeleton expertise, if you're one of 300 people on Earth who have skeleton expertise, or like hanging around maybe the DMZ zone or something, just randomly, even if you're on the North Korean side, we'll hook somebody up.
Yeah.
If you want to help AJ, oh boy.
I want to know more about sort of the dynamic of like the Israel team. Like, so you're going to be rooming with these guys, right, in the Olympic Village?
I believe so. Yeah. Well, I have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so then after you're done, are you going to get a chance? Like, or maybe it's not your teammates. Maybe it's just other Olympic events in general. Like, are there any other events that you're looking forward to watching as a spectator, as a fan?
Well, Israel kind of kicks you out of the Olympic Village for security reasons after your event is finished. So I won't be staying in Korea after my event. I'm pretty bummed about it. I really wanted to walk in closing. Closing ceremonies, but that's just how it works when you're an Israeli. I believe it's also an issue of funding. They just don't want to fund the extra time. They have to insure the athletes. So,
yeah, I'm sure it's expensive at the Olympics.
I mean, this is the first time Israel's ever given me any money. They've given me $1,000 for a flight to Korea, which is really nice. So it's the first time I've received some national level funding, which feels pretty good at the end of the road, essentially.
You hear sometimes about athletes from smaller countries, and Israel's done this too, who basically qualify and they say, nah, we're not sending you. So, I guess just be thankful that they're like letting you.
That was a major hurdle that we had to overcome.
All right, AJ, outside of skeleton, I've, you know, read a couple articles about you, and it seems like you have some super interesting other athletic pursuits. Can you tell us about the bodybuilding thing for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. There was just kind of a time period when I was playing hockey that I wanted to see if I could do some other pursuits, with the exception of just hockey. And I think bodybuilding was just one of those things where, since I was in the gym for so often, I thought it could be a real good outlet to try. And so, aside from what I was doing in the gym, it was basically just adding in an extremely regimented diet. And a few more moves. So bodybuilding became a thing for over a year to try to get ready to step on stage and basically do the whole posing thing and look like a much, much, much smaller version of Arnold Schwarzenegger, which everybody kind of tries to emulate in that world. So that was the bodybuilding thing that happened in 2013 and 14.
Yeah. No, I saw a picture. It, you look a little different now.
I looked like an Oompa Loompa, I'd say. I was spray tanned as
yeah, it's pretty wild. Those the bodybuilding look is pretty awesome. But let me ask you a question. Let's just say, you're not going to do this, but in a hypothetical world, I said, AJ, you have 2.5 years to make the Summer Olympics. You know, Jeff Bezos will give you $100 million if you qualify for the Summer Olympics. You pick the sport. What sport are you picking to make the Olympics?
Ah, damn, that's really a hard one. I mean, there's a sport I'd love to make it in. There's a sport that would be more feasible to make it in, I think.
I mean, if you say basketball, like, you know, everyone's going to think you're an idiot. Like, you're not going to be one of the 12 best. So, like,
No, I think it would be incredibly difficult, but I would love to try to make it in weightlifting. The reason it's incredibly difficult to make it in weightlifting is because it seems like half of all weightlifters get disqualified 4 years later for doping. So, So it's really difficult in terms of that, but I think weightlifting would be the way that I definitely want to approach it, because weightlifting is such a critical component of what we do in terms of doing cleans and snatches. Cleans and snatches are basically the top two things that we do in training in the gym to build explosive hip movement. So, I mean, weightlifting would be the way to go.
Yeah, no, I think that's the correct answer. I mean, it depends on how big you are. Like, sometimes, like, I think, like, well, if I'm, you know, like 220 something pounds, like if I was in the UFC, I would be like a heavyweight. You know what I mean? So like it depends how big you are. But I actually think that's kind of a good answer because it's, you know, a sport that America's not great at. No American males won a weightlifting medal in many, many years. That's actually a pretty good answer. Yeah, I'm very excited to have a real rooting interest. I was going to root for there's a lot of funny names in Skeleton AJ, right? One of the Americans named John Daly, and I believe there's a Brit named Jerry Rice. So a lot of big celebrities.
Jerry's a great friend. John, I know actually, but he's most well known for his hair.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has some very handsome hair that we all love.
So there's a lot of celebrities in Skeleton. Now, this is a stupid question, but let's say it was like the fourth run, and you're like, all right, fine, you know, I'm sort of locked into a spot. You couldn't like put a yarmulke on to go down, right? I'm sure that would be against the rules.
Actually, you know, I considered painting a yarmulke onto the kippah. Onto the helmet. But no, I couldn't just put a yarmulke on. Your head undergoes, when you undergo 5G forces of pressure, when you enter one of those high speed corners, your head actually smashes down to the ice sometimes at a rate of about 600 meters per second. If your actual bare head did that, you'd crack your skull open pretty hard and probably kill yourself. So, no, I couldn't just throw on a yarmulke and do it. But Samson is on the helmet, and I'm very proud of that. And, you know, Samson, it's the helmet that's – I actually went out – I don't know if you guys know of Tuukka Rask, but you guys are are sports people. But
yeah, we know Tuukka
Rask. The person who paints his helmet, Ron Slater – I went out a couple weeks ago when I was in Boston just visiting my parents before we heard the news that I was actually going to the Olympic Games. I brought him my helmet. I said, hey, I'd really love for you to paint Samson on the helmet. It's a new helmet for the games that I got. And you know, paint something that portrays Israel as a strong nation. So give me a real strong Samson with some wild looking hair. And he did. He painted a really, really, really good Samson onto it. And that's hopefully the helmet that'll turn some heads. Usually what skeleton athletes are most well known for are their helmets. So the helmet's always been a focal point of my sliding career in terms of just trying to get people to take a story or a message from it. And Samson's what's actually most of the news stories in Israel will always mention the Samson helmet. In fact, they either call me the Hapatish Ivri, the Hebrew hammer, or they call me Shimshon, which is Samson. But
you know, the Hebrew hammer's been done 50 times. I think you have to get a more original nickname than that. I think we.
I guess so. It's what I became known for at the track, because you know that's basically how I showed up.
I like Samson the slider. That's not bad.
I mean, it's a pretty ferocious looking helmet, I gotta say.
Yeah, no, it's a great helmet.
It's a good one. The new one, you guys should see. I'll send you over pictures of it. The new one's pretty radical looking. Actually, I just posted pictures of it to Twitter, so you'd be able to log on and see that.
AJ, what's your Twitter handle?
Do you have people coming to cheer you on, like family members or good friends or anything?
My handle is Israel Skeleton, but do I have people who are coming to cheer me on? Yes, my parents are coming to cheer me on, as are my brothers and my girlfriend. However, skeleton is the worst spectator sport in the history of spectator sports. It's the equivalent of if you were to watch golf from only one part of one corner for the entire day. You see a guy going by at 90 miles an hour. He disappears after you see him for 1 second, and then you have to wait 2 minutes for the next dude. So they are coming because it is the Olympics, but they are fully aware that it's going to be watching paint dry for them.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, right. They're going to have to basically follow it on their phones, probably, depending on where they're sitting.
Yeah, they'll have to. There will be giant screens there. I'm assuming that you can choose to stand at the start, which is where a lot of the action happens, that sprinting start. You can watch an athlete for about 5 seconds before they disappear. So hopefully they bought tickets to that part. But, you know, the tickets for actually for day two, my mom is incredibly into Ayanharas, or, you know, not making Ayanharas, not making, you know, jinxing things. So we didn't prepare at all past January 17th. January 17th is when we got the call, and we had no plans, no flights, no tickets, anything past January 17th. And because of that, the event is sold out for day two. And so my parents won't even be able to come to my event for day two. And,
wait, hold on. Your parents don't love you enough to scalp the tickets? Let's get some StubHub out here. Hold on. I'm literally on StubHub right now. You keep talking.
He's looking for tickets on StubHub.
He's looking for tickets on StubHub. The Skeleton event, just because the second day is a gold medal event, that's why it would be sold out. But Skeleton's not a very popular sport to watch. The most popular sports are aerials, which are actually quite spectacular. But skeleton's not bad if you stand at the right point. You know, it's just kind of boring for the 2 minutes that you're waiting for the next dude to go.
All right, hold on. We got some action here on StubHub.
Yeah, action to the skeleton event at the Olympic Games.
Yeah, but I don't think they're. I think it's just like a. I don't think it's really the tickets, but who knows? But yeah, no, they should look into scalping if they're already there. You know, they're kind of already in South Korea, or like make it a big thing. Like next time you go on like a media presence, you know, and any, like say like my parents need tickets if someone wants to hook me up.
You know, it's maybe somebody will be listening to this podcast and just reach out and be like, I have.
Yeah, well, where's Ken? Where's Ken at? I'm going to DM him right now.
Ken would have media access. For those who don't know what we're talking about, Ken Childs is basically the lead analyst of all sliding sports across luge, bobsled, and skeleton.
He's like Adam Schefter and like Chris Collinsworth. Like
yeah, and nobody, like none of us know really how he got into it. We're just like one day he makes a site called Sliding on Ice, and we're like, what's this site? And then we realize it has more updated information than the actual international bobsled and skeleton
site. Yeah, you have to use it as your reference if you're writing about this.
Exactly.
Amazingly, there aren't like competitors, you know? There's no like five other like startup sites out there trying to get all that sweet skeleton money.
Oh yeah, I don't think Ken is. I don't think Ken has to go out and Tonya Harding some people.
No, and you know you have to. He has to like wake up at 3 a.m. to watch most of these races, like on some like shady virusy stream. He told me
it's really weird. Yeah, I don't know how he does it.
I mean, let's be honest. If like this is it for you, if you retire on top here, you're never watching another skeleton race in your life.
Skeleton is a sport that I'll be happy to walk away from, to be very frank. Living amongst athletes for an entire year is sometimes a jarring experience, so I'll be very happy to kind of walk away from the sport when that time does come.
Are you the do you think you're the first Orthodox Jew to ever compete in the Winter Olympics?
So yeah, in the Winter Olympics. But I mean, it might be a funny fun fact that I am the second MIT graduate to represent a country in the skeleton event, the other being Patrick Intaki of Lebanon. So both of us have competed for Middle Eastern countries, and both are MIT graduates. He competed in the 2006 games in Turin.
All right, I'm gonna end you off here. I gave you a shout out. I like you, Adam. I knew you were coming on the podcast, so I gave you a shout out in my Dead Swim preview coming out next Thursday. I'm gonna read it to you right now. You tell me if I have to fix it or if it's good. Okay. Okay. AJ Edelman. I think I have to write Adam because that's like your technical name.
I guess so.
But you prefer AJ, right?
I far prefer AJ. My parents actually didn't know it's an.
Okay, so I'll write AJ. Yeah. Not to brag, friend or friend. But how do you know Tzvi Raps, by the way? He's the podcast listener who hooked us up.
Tzvi, wow, Tzvi is so Tzvi Raps went to Yeshiva, or as we called it, Camp Leva Torah in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Mm-hmm. And so we both were, I guess the term is Yeshiva mates while mm-hmm. there. So I know Tzvi from that period of time in my life, 2010.
Okay. We actually have never met him. He's a listener, and hopefully we'll meet him at some point. All right, so Adam Edelman of Israel is set to become the first Orthodox Jew to compete at the Winter Olympics. It's a good thing the skeleton competition is on Thursday and Friday mornings because Edelman doesn't roll, in parentheses, down the hill on Shabbos.
Whoa, Edelman doesn't roll on Shabbos. That's a Big Lebowski. It's a Big Lebowski reference, right?
Yes, correct. And I had to put the down the hill in there for it to make sense. All right, so you're approved. Awesome. I can keep that in there.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Okay, great. Are you a Patriots fan, Adam?
Oh, I love the Pats. I'm a huge Tom Brady fan. Sorry to all the listeners out there who are Jets fans.
All right, AJ, sorry you came on the podcast. We will have to be rooting for somebody else in the Olympics next week. But
what's so bad about Tom Brady?
I don't know. I think I might be rooting for him on Sunday, unfortunately. I haven't decided.
Ah, nice.
Are you confident? AJ, are you confident on Sunday?
About the Pats winning the Super Bowl? Yeah. Absolutely. Tom Terrific doesn't fail, except if it's against the Giants.
Is it weird that you're going to be in the Olympics next weekend? That's like weird, right? That like you're just a regular guy. You're like us, but you're going to be in the Olympics next week.
The funny thing is it hasn't hit me. So, I mean, I thought that when I got the call, it would be some kind of surreal moment where I kind of broke down crying and everything. And it just kind of didn't because life continues on. I think
buy tickets and stuff. You had to like plan. You're probably in.
Oh yeah, for the last week, it's right. The last week and a half has been total work mode, and tonight I got to buy tickets on the train for Korea for my parents. But to be very frank, like, it just hasn't hit. And in my mind, it's kind of like the graduating from MIT thing. So it's like, you made the Olympics, so what? You need to actually go do something at the Olympics, or use that experience to better your community. So it just hasn't hit me that I can call myself an Olympian now. And I don't know when it will. I'm assuming walking into the ceremonies would be that particular point in time, just because the ceremonies have always been what caused me to kind of tear up and seeing the Israeli athletes going. But, you know, am I surprised at going to the Olympics? Yeah, I don't feel like any different than I did, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I'm just aging.
Is there someone you want to meet? Is there someone there that, like, you really, other than the skeleton athletes, that you're like, ooh, that would be
cool? Oh, man, that's like, there's so much backstory to wanting to meet various athletes. I used to, like, deadly want to date this girl named Jessica Fox, who is an Australian kayaker, and who is Jewish. And then I also wanted to date, like, Ali Reisman. But it's, you know, because I was like, oh, well, I want to go to the Olympics, and they're Jewish, and they're Olympian, so let's make that happen.
You know, AJ, Ali Reisman is my wife's cousin, so if things don't work out with your girlfriend, then I can help you out.
Well, I mean, Ali Reisman's dating a football player to the best of my knowledge, so I think my fascination with Ali Reisman is kind of dried up. But.
All right, so he plays football, but you've played hockey and weightlifting. So you're three, and he hasn't made the Olympics.
Was he ever in the Olympics? I don't remember football ever being.
Yeah, exactly. So I think she'd probably dump him for you in a second if she got the chance.
Basically, who I'd want to meet in the Olympics is anybody who had my kind of story. So I'm yet to kind of look for. I got to kind of look for somebody who's made it in 4 years without kind of coaching and who used YouTube as their primary source of learning. So I'm sure I'll find somebody there like that, and we would be able to come.
Do you know the story of Aaron Jackson, AJ?
Is he the javelin thrower?
No. First of all, there's no javelin in the Olympics coming up next week. Don't.
No.
If someone tries to sell you javelin tickets, that's a scammer.
Just why? There's ice javelin. What about the Night King in Game of Thrones?
That's true. Yeah. I knew you'd bring it back to something nerdy, Chester. So Aaron Jackson was an American, like, inline roller skater who decided in March to take up speed skating. She did it for like a month, went back to like her old thing, and then in September took it up for 3 more months, and with 4 months of training made a really hard to make American 500 meter, that's the shortest distance, speed skating team.
Wow, that's incredible.
She's been skating for 4 months. She made the team. She's the first African-American female, I think, to ever make a long track speed skating team. Pretty crazy. So you could look her up.
I definitely will. So it's Aaron Jackson.
Mm-hmm. And what about Peter Nicholas Taufua Tafua, you know, the flag bearer from Tonga?
Oh, yeah, those stories are kind of bogus.
Oh, my God, I'm not meeting that dude. Sorry, I hope he's not listening, but not a fan.
Not a fan? Why? He's sexy.
I should go and lube myself up and get a whole bunch of... No, I think, you know, like, props to him for making the Olympic Games. I'll never bash somebody for making the Olympic Games. But, you know, making the Olympic Games after basically lubing yourself up for some publicity is not really my idea of how I achieve the Games. I achieved the Games in 4 years of absolute nonstop work of watching 6 hours of video a day and slamming myself into ice walls. And, you know,
you can't even practice now, AJ, right, until you get to Korea, right, because there's nowhere to practice.
I could have gone to Park City, Utah, but I just didn't have the money. Israel still is not paying for stuff. So the cost to fly to Park City, Utah with my bags, I always have to fly with 3 bags, which are each 70 pounds. So the oversized bag charges are just an arm and a leg. I couldn't get to Park City, Utah, so it's just the sprinting. I'm just sprinting here in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's crazy. You know, you think about, like, you watch the games, you don't think about all this nitty-gritty, like paying for extra baggage on excess bag fees. It's not the sexiest thing.
It's such a crazy story. Like, in 2014, the way I achieved American Airlines status to get my bags to fly free for the next year was every Wednesday I'd fly to Japan or another Asian country on an economy ticket, the cheapest I could find, and then walk across the terminal to a returning flight that took off the same time, essentially, and return to California. And just do this. I did it about 10 times round trip and got 100,000 miles while sitting in the smallest of small economy seats possible. So I had the highest status on American Airlines the hard way.
We should have led with that story that you just flew to Japan 10 times for the miles.
I did fly to Japan 10 times for the miles. I actually once flew from California across the country to Miami just so I could fly from Miami to Dallas and then Dallas to Hong Kong. So that entire trip took over 24 hours.
I'm gonna take like a stab at something here. When you get into something, AJ, you don't go like halfway. You become like absolutely obsessed with things. That's my impression. After
I've become massively obsessed. Like Skeleton was just an absolute obsessive journey in terms of going to the tracks every day. The maximum recommended times that you should go on a Skeleton site is 3 per day, and that's because anything over 3, your neck is so tired that it just drags the rest of the way down the ice. If you take a 4th, your central nervous system gets so burnt out that you can't steer effectively. But I heard in my first year that the reason I couldn't feel the pressures, meaning in the corners in the first year, you're essentially blind. So your neck is not strong enough to hold up. So you're just dragging your face in all the corners. You can't feel a thing. And then you just come out and smash a wall. So it was really painful, but I was like, well, why can't I feel if I'm going up or down? At least I want to feel that. And it's because the body can't adapt to the 5G forces until you've taken about 100 or 150 times down the track. And so in order to get the 150 times down the track, I would go from California every week on Thursday during the season. I'd go Thursday and then train Thursday, Friday, Motse Shabbos, Sunday, and I would go not 3 times but 8 times a day. And and over the course of the season, achieved close to 200 runs in what was equivalently a quarter of a season. A lot of athletes don't achieve 150 runs in a full season. So, I've become completely obsessed with a mission once it started, and will do whatever it takes to finish it.
Now I'm excited to see what your next thing is, and that's why I really like my Summer Olympics question.
As I was thinking about it, what you said in terms of what I would like to do in the Summer Olympics, cycling is one of those sports which you actually get into and become quite proficient at later in your life.
Yeah, cycling. That when someone tries to write a book, which never ends up happening, like I'm going to make the Olympics for like Sri Lanka, it's always cycling.
Sri Lanka. Or you could just move to an African nation and get your free spot. But the only reason to ever do this whole thing was for Israel. So Israel it is. Mm-hmm.
All right, AJ, I really appreciate your time. We wish you so much good luck. I hope you have an incredible experience. Hope you, you do as well as you possibly can. And, you represent. Yeah. No, listen, I'm just inspired that you throw yourself in. The way you throw yourself into like getting miles and Skeleton and bodybuilding, like the only thing I've ever put myself push myself to do that hard is basically napping, which I'm definitely like Olympic level at this point.
Napping is great for you. I mean, so long as you can get up and do some Skeleton rounds afterwards.
There's a woman, her thing, a female Olympian, her thing is she sleeps 10 hours a day and then takes a 2-hour nap. So she literally sleeps 12 hours a day. And like to her, that's like her secret. So.
I got to find this woman. That's like an interesting training regimen. I can use that.
But yeah, AJ, so thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Safe trip. Good luck there. And, maybe we'll speak to you afterwards. Have a good one.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the invite, guys.
Okay. Good luck, AJ. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Heidi Wang. That was her name. Cross-country skiing, 12 hours a day.
Okay, Kiev. So excited to have AJ on the podcast. Excited to watch him in the Olympics, have something to root for. We still have to finalize our Winter Olympics pool, by the way. We haven't done
it. Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that. That's right.
Yeah, all right. So we'll talk about that next week, but let's finish up.
Yeah, and we'll post in the group. We had an amazing one in 2014. That was a lot of fun, but it only had 8 people in it. So I think we have to change up the format to allow.
Yeah, that format, which a few people have asked if we can do it again, but yeah, that's limited to like 8 or 10 people. So we got to come up with a different format to the masses that are trying to get in. You know, whatever. We have to make our picks for this stupid game on Sunday. So yeah. What's your pick?
24-17 Eagles.
Well, you did say right after the title games that you were picking the Eagles, so you're consistent with that.
Yep. Yeah, picking the Eagles to cover and to win.
I don't know who I'm going to root for, and I've been going back and forth, but it's when you watch the game, your heart wants what it wants.
Yeah.
So, like during that Falcons-Eagles game, I talked about this. During the Falcons-Eagles game in the divisional round, even though intellectually I knew I obviously wanted the Falcons to win, I couldn't help myself. I was rooting for the Eagles for some reason. So I don't know how I'm going to root. I'm going to wait and let my, if I watch it, which I don't even know if I'm going to watch it, but I'll let my heart decide.
Could you earn, what my dad does every year? He takes my mom out during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So could you earn like major brownie points by like hiring a babysitter and taking Jen out on Sunday night?
Nah, because my wife knows. My wife wouldn't fall for that. It's not like she's going to say, oh, you really want to watch that. You know, I did that one year when the Celtics and the Lakers were in the finals for the second year time. So that was 2010, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2008. They made it. Of course, Celtics won. 2009, KG gets injured, and so the Magic ended up in the finals, which was terrible. 2010 was when they lost in Game 7. On the night of Game 7, I got tickets to the ballet for our anniversary. And I thought I was going to get so many points for that. Yeah. And instead, she was just mad at me from looking on my phone for like score updates. And I was like, I'm literally giving up Game 7 of the finals for my favorite player ever. Now, by the way, we were going to be home for the second half, but I was just, you know, checking the first half from time to time on my phone, and instead of getting credit, oh, wow, you took me to the ballet during Game 7 of the NBA Finals, it was, how dare you look at your phone three times during this stupid
ass. I mean, this is why you're, like, so much of a better husband than me, because I would never go to the ballet.
Even
if my wife said, like, no, just in general. Like, even during the Pro Bowl, I wouldn't go to the ballet, and I've never watched the Pro Bowl. Like, if my wife said it's time to go to the ballet, I'd say, well, like, start Googling divorce lawyers. Like, I'm not, I would never, like, if I don't want to do something, I'm pretty, like, I don't know. I've put myself in a position in life where.
Yeah, I know. You're a child. I've seen your eating habits. So, all right. So, my pick, I took the over on 47.5. I just, other than against the Giants, obviously, the Patriots tend to have high-scoring Super Bowls. I think this one's going to be higher scoring than we think. I think Nick Foles is actually going to move the ball a little bit because I have no respect for the Patriots defense. I will say the Patriots will win 31-27, but it won't be close. So it'll be 31-20, and the Eagles will get a touchdown, sort of like they did the last time they played the Patriots.
And is Brady your MVP? My MVP is Jay Ajayi.
Jay Ajayi for MVP. Wow.
Yeah.
So that trade finally comes through. Yeah.
I also, by the way, if you're not in the Facebook group, I'm going to put the I think it's 11th annual or 12th annual Super Bowl prop bet game, which is 25 questions. You can print out a bunch of them and then bring them and bring pens because people always forget pens. And it's always like in the 20 minutes beforehand, bring pens. And it's like yes or no or over under or this player, that player type questions. It's a fun game. You could fill it out in like 5-10 minutes. Bring it to your Super Bowl party. Everyone put in $5 or if you don't gamble or maybe more if you're a big baller. Or you could even I think this year I let people join mine. It's just $5 per person. So I'll post it in the group and you could either, you know, print it out as a Word document and bring it yourself or join mine, which Chester usually does. But yeah, Jay Ajayi, my MVP.
All right, Jay Ajayi, your MVP. I guess, look, if the Patriots are winning 31-20 or 31-27, I think I gave the Eagles a late cover. How is it not going to be Brady, right? Like, what would another guy have to do for it to be him?
Well, if maybe one of the guys gets all the touchdowns, which Belichick does like once a year. Like if Deion Lewis got like 3 touchdowns or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, I mean, you could have made
as
an argument
last
year for James
White. Once you have a few MVPs, they look for another guy to give it to, a la Duncan versus Parker in the fourth one. Or...
Yeah, that was an abomination. Of course, Paul Pierce stole it over KG, the only chance KG had, which is an abomination as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess it's going to be Brady, and then we're going to have to hear about that again. And then we'll have the long slog of no football for another 9 months.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wish we had the XFL. Now I kind of get why the XFL could work.
Yeah. I have the same feeling that I had like after like the season finale of Game of Thrones. Like I was underwhelmed. The season did not end how I wanted it to end, but still, it's so far away until the next one, and it makes me really sad.
Yeah, I don't care about Game of Thrones enough to have that feeling.
Yeah,
I have that with football, and every time I end a meal, I feel that way until like after the next meal. Because the thing about eating is like it's not. There's nothing good out of like you finish, and then it's like that doesn't do you much good for more than like. You know, a few hours, like half a day.
8 minutes. Oh, I was going to say 8 minutes.
No, I'm saying like even the thought of the meal, it's like, all right, that just gets you to your next meal. Like you're only as good as your last meal.
Yeah, but as Jerry Seinfeld says, you know that there's no shortage of appetites coming. So,
I love food.
All right, we've checked all the boxes. Game of Thrones, Seinfeld, all the references have been made. Akiva, I will talk to you next week.
Maybe.
Bye.